follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
I seek truth, no use sits within me. How deep would I go to find what I know about me? You don't know me like God does, like I do. I'm training myself to know how to sing, trust myself, believing everything that I know. I can keep up with my mind.
Welcome to Thresholds to Awakening with your host, Sway Emily Spilkin. Deep inside our greatest challenges live the seeds of our soul medicine, illness, trauma, loss, and crisis. If we enter them completely, can be gateways to the full embodiment of who we really are. Now, here is Sway Spilkin.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Thresholds to Awakening, the show that helps you transform your deepest challenges into soul medicine. I'm your host, Sway Spilkin, and I am a body and soul-centered psychotherapist in Boulder, Colorado, specializing in helping people transform through the thresholds of their lives, trauma, illness, loss, and other life challenges. And today I have the great honor of interviewing Dr. Michael Smith. And Michael is the author of three popular books, including The Complete Empath Toolkit. And he works to help his clients recognize their connection to universal source energy and embrace their gifts of empathic sensitivity. As a doctoral trained counselor, energy medicine practitioner, and spirit medium, his international coaching summits have reached hundreds of thousands and over 750,000 have downloaded materials at his website. And I think that, if I remember, Michael's at www.empathconnection.com.
Absolutely.
Great, great. And he's received invitations to speak alongside luminaries like Greg Braden and Marcy Shymoff, along with appearances at the Omega Institute and in documentary films. Michael has spent over a decade working with indigenous healers around the globe to more deeply explore and promote human potential. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you so much, Sway, for having me, and welcome to all of the listeners out there.
Great. Thank you. And I would love to actually start off by finding out a little bit more about your path into this particular work. And from reading your book and kind of checking out your website, I get the sense that you found your way to your particular offering, your true work of supporting empaths through a few different routes, one being born into your gifts as an empath yourself, and you tell a story about that in the beginning of your book, which I'll ask you to share in a moment, about being a child empath and what that was like. Also by, you know, studying with traditional Western psychology, you know, studying traditional Western psychology and also studying with Native American elders, and by healing through your own health challenges, what I like to think of as the path of initiation. So does that kind of sum it up, those three strains kind of coming together? And can you talk a little bit about that?
It sure does. You know, integration and coming together is the job of a lot of us on the planet right now, and a lot of us are waking up to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, in many thanks due to people like you who are able to bring us together and allow for the dissemination of information. So as far as my particular, you know, path of initiation, is, as you said, I was an empathic child. And basically what that means is, you know, I was real sensitive to other people and other people's emotions and the feelings and motivations, I guess you'd say, of other people. So as a child, I had, you know, many experiences, and this is something that continues to this day and is very common for those of us who are empathic and sensitive, is we can look at people and we basically get the overall gestalt of a person, the overall gist of a person, just by looking at them. We can look in their eyes. We can know what they're going through because we literally feel the energy of other people in our own bodies and in our own energy system. So as a kid, you know, there are many instances where I would be around people and I had no difficulty speaking what I was perceiving to my parents. And sometimes that was received well, and other times it wasn't received so well. One of the memories that I have is as a kid is you know, telling my parents, you know, as a kid you don't have much of a filter, so telling my parents my opinion of what I was perceiving, and they would tend to poo-poo it. Oh, no, this person's not like that. We had a pastor of our church one time, and it didn't really resonate with him at the time because I had a feeling that he was up to no good, and sure enough, it turned out later that he was taking money from the church. Mm-hmm. So those are examples of some of the traits of an empath. So I use that, to make a long story short, for my career, and I became a counselor. Mm-hmm. And did a master's degree in psychology, and then practiced a little bit, and then got a PhD in counselor education, and then I was teaching people how to become traditional mental health counselors and also school counselors. And what I found was, after a number of years, I'm sure others on the line can relate to this, I felt like something just... It wasn't right. It wasn't clicking. There was something that was missing. And what was missing was the spiritual component, the energetic component, and basically the heart of my profession. So I was there as a counselor, and we're taught to deal with the mind. And we're not necessarily taught, I know, Sway, you have some training in Hakomi, which is a little bit different. It's body-based psychotherapy. The program that I was in, we weren't taught that. And I felt like, okay, that, the focus on the body, the focus on the spirit and the heart, was missing. So I left. And that was a difficult decision. It was kind of one of my thresholds, I guess, to awakening. I love that phrase that you use. And that led me to Santa Fe, New Mexico. I started doing some ceremonies there, and in different traditions, actually. And I loved it. I was like, okay, this is fantastic. I get to explore Sufi. I get to explore African spiritual ceremonies. I get to explore ayahuasca and Peruvian ceremonies and Native American ceremonies. And I started to feel for the first time in my life alive, and not only alive, I started to feel aligned with my soul's calling, and I experienced that embodied on a daily basis. And that led to a whole bunch of fantastic stuff started to happening, where previously I was feeling, you know, misery and shadow and darkness. I started to feel happiness for the first time in my life. And that led me to do the work that I do today, which is I do work similar to what you do, Sway, and I help people find their passion, find their joy, and rediscover who they really are as a spiritual being, as a sensitive being, as an energy being. And I do that again, like you said. Sorry, I was sipping a little water when you mentioned the name of the website, empathconnection.com. Okay. That's just a little bit of the story there.
You know, we're going to, in a moment, get into what are the characteristics of being an empath and kind of open that up a little bit for the listeners. But I want to comment on something that you said, which was that when you started to actually step into what felt like the stream of your true calling, that's where you found joy. And just to comment that, you know, I think for a lot of people, it's that misalignment or the disconnect from what we're really here to do. And yet we have the kind of energetic makeup to do that thing, but we're not yet doing it. And somehow the dissonance between the fact that we're set up to be a teacher, to be a healer, to be, you know, whatever it is for each individual person, but we're not actually fully doing that, is a big piece of what can cause, right, depression or suffering, pain, you know, physical ailments, all of those things, is the lack of alignment with mission.
Yes. You know, I love that. In the sense of, you know, the listeners will know right now, you know, ask your body, and let's ask a specific part of the body. I like to do practical exercises that are examples of what you just talked about, and which I wholeheartedly agree. So let's take it one step deeper. For those of you that are listening, you may have your gut may already have a message for you and may be telling you or attempting to reach you, might be a nice way of saying it, attempting to reach you about who you really are at your core essence, your core being, and yet you may be, just like I did, just like many of us do, we walk around in the world disconnected from our bodies, disconnected from our souls, disconnected from those other parts of ourselves. I like to say we have multiple bodies. We just don't have a physical body. We've got a spiritual body, an emotional body, a mental body, so on and so forth. So we walk around disconnected, as you said. Great word. So let's reconnect. And it's as simple as this. Place your hand on your gut. And simply, this may seem a little awkward and strange, and if so, fantastic, because you're creating new neural pathways. Say hello to your gut. Say hello to that area which some know as the solar plexus. It's the body's truth detector. It will always tell you the truth of any given situation. And say hello to it. Thank it for supporting you. And then just ask it, God, are there areas of my life that you are attempting to teach me, attempting to move me towards? Are there messages there that you are attempting to offer to me that I am disconnected from or perhaps ignoring? And your gut will speak to you through a feeling. And it may be a feeling of constriction. It may be a feeling of expansion. Whatever that feeling is, focus it on that sensation. And messages may start to bubble up for you. Some of you may see images or symbols which are attempting to communicate. Some of you may see or hear words. Some of you may just know, clear knowing, may know, like, yeah. And I think this is a practice that we do in our coaching, I do in my work. It's just takes something as simple as just saying hello to you, this specific part of your body that is working on your behalf and your divine, helping you fulfill your divine blueprint, as silly as that may sound, or new as that may sound. That's all it takes, is something as simple as that, to get us back reconnected.
Thank you for that. It's amazing. No matter how many times I do this simple practice of tuning in and listening, you would think it gets boring, but it doesn't. There's because every time we're brought fresh into the moment and there's more information or a new way of relating to ourselves, a deeper way of relating. So I just appreciate you offering that.
And thank you.
Yeah, and I would love to actually just go a little bit deeper into unpacking for those people who don't totally understand or aren't necessarily familiar with this idea of empath. You know, we all know what empathy is, but what is it that you mean by when you talk about empaths or highly sensitive people? What are some of the characteristics of these individuals, yourself, myself included?
Important to acknowledge that we have a mind, we have what's known as an ego, and it likes labels, because labels summarize and make things real easy for it to understand and digestible. So when we say the label empath and highly sensitive person, we're talking about a collection of traits that certain individuals have, most of the traits, okay, most of these traits. And here's a list of some of the traits. Now, I already mentioned one of the traits, and that we can look at an individual and just we get them, we intuitively get them, because we can feel them. Now, connected to that is that empathic and sensitive individuals have tremendous compassion for other individuals because we understand them, and that includes both humans and animals. We see the best in others, and it is a belief of mine that we come into this planet, onto this earth, for a specific reason, and that is to help. So if you are a person who likes to help, it's kind of in your DNA, you like to assist humanity, your friends, your family, you may be an empath or what other people call earth angels. I've heard that term used, and you, or you may be more resonant with the term, you know, an indigo person. That's another term that is describing who we really are at our core. And we are good listeners at our core. We are the natural counselors. People are drawn to us. So if you're a person who people come up to and they just pour out their stories, and sometimes it maybe feel like, gosh, why is this person telling me so much? They're just dumping their stuff on you. You're probably empathic, because that person that you're talking to senses your natural compassion, senses your naturally high vibrational spirit, which isn't going to judge them. And that's great for the other person, and yet, we'll talk about this later, hopefully, that can oftentimes leave the empath or sensitive person drained,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's a common experience of feeling drained when you're around other people simply because they take up a lot of your consciousness and your awareness, and you willingly give it to them because of your good spirit. Some of us cry very easily. We're very in touch with the emotions of other people and our own emotions. And spontaneous crying is one of the body's divine ways to attempt to cleanse it of the energy that of the people or just the energy that you are around. And so many of us feel very deeply. And a lot of us have experiences. You may have had the experience of for no apparent reason, feeling a particular emotion. So this may be feeling of sadness or feeling of nervousness or just freaking out generally, for lack of better words. And you may have found out later, you know, at the time you may have been confused, why am I feeling this? You may have found out later that maybe a close friend was going through something or family member or maybe somebody died. That's a very common experience for those of us that are sensitive. And finally, most of us are very sensitive to our surroundings. So this includes our environment, sensitivity to chemicals. Sway, I know I was reading on your website you had a mm-hmm. pretty intense experience, right?
Yeah, I did.
With that, yeah. So we're sensitive to our surroundings. We tend to avoid chaos and chaotic places like malls. Because we get overloaded. Our nervous system is already heightened. And when we go to a place that has chaos within it, our body just wants to run and run away. And trauma also is associated. That's anecdotal. In my practice, I see about anywhere from 50 to 70% of my clients have some form of what could be considered a traumatic experience that ultimately made them even more sensitive and mm-hmm. kind of broke them open. So, and if you're interested, you can take the quiz at empathconnection.com. There's a quiz on the main page there you can take if you want to learn more about the traits and whether or not, you know, or what type of an empath you might be.
Great. You know, a couple things in there. You mentioned that sense of, you know, being ultra sensitive or going to a mall and feeling bombarded and overwhelmed. And I know that when I was going through my period of, you know, chemical sensitivities, that was absolutely the case and until I really learned to work with my energy. But a lot of people, you know, don't even... they notice it, but they don't actually know that there's an alternative, right? They just think, well, this is just the way I am, or this is just the way that life is. I just happen to be overwhelmed, so I'm going to avoid everything and become really avoidant, or I'm going to self-medicate. And you talk a little bit about that, the coping mechanisms or self-medicating, or, you know, because we have to manage it, because we can't actually live with that level of nervous system stimulation. It's actually too much, so there has to be ways of working with it. And I know that a big piece of what you teach with your toolkit is really, okay, let me give you the healthy tools. Let me actually support you in finding ways to work with the bombardment so that you can actually consider the state of your system and work with it as a gift and as medicine instead of just experiencing it as poison.
Right, I love that. Medicine versus poison. You know, we deal a lot with paradox, burden versus gift. So in the work that I do, in my coaching work and in my book, it's actually an instructional package, as you referenced, the Complete Empath Toolkit, we talk about the maladaptive and then the adaptive ways of coping.
Yeah.
So as you just referenced, you know, there, the probably the biggest maladaptive method of coping, which is done by default, because those of us who are awakening empaths and awakening sensitives, the automatic reaction is to basically leave the body and just to run away. So that can be done, as you said, through substances, and probably the biggest way, default method of coping is to just run away into our heads.
Sure.
Right? And that's a real comfortable place for many of us to exist for a while. If we spend too much time there, what happens is it begins to become uncomfortable because we get out of balance. And if we're living in our heads, we can become what's called disassociated from our other resources, which include our physical body. So the maladaptive method of coping is to, and that's what I was doing actually when I was a professor. That's what I didn't like particularly about what I was choosing to do at the time, by default, which is to be an academic and to use my left brain, which is linear-based thinking. I wasn't utilizing my other resources, which include my heart, my gut, and the earth, and my physical body in conjunction with the earth. So that's what we do. That's what I teach, you know, awakening empaths and awakening sensitive, is to adaptively cope. We want to do we want to do many things. If I was going to distill it down into the most important, I would say we want to become embodied and also grounded. They're similar, they're different words describing a similar process that is taught in the Empath Toolkit, and that is finding as many ways and rituals and ceremonies and disciplines and practices, sustained practices done over time, a little bit each day, that will help you to become embodied, to get out of your head and back into your body. So here's an example of what we're talking about, being grounded and embodied. Real simple, practical example. Rub your thumb and your index, your pointing finger, together. Choose one of your hands and just rub them together. And now start to increase the speed of rubbing until you start to feel the heat and really capture that sensation, that physical feeling of heat being created through the friction. Okay? Most of you, that's the easy part. That's pretty easy to do. What's a little bit more challenging, and it takes a little bit more focus, is I want you to isolate the feeling of the top finger. Isolate the feeling of that pointing finger. Just that finger. And feel the bottom of that finger being rubbed. What does it feel like in that part of your body to have that finger touched as you continue to rub? And now feel the thumb. Switch your consciousness into your thumb and just feel the thumb and feel what the thumb experiences being rubbed. Some of you probably got that pretty easily. Others, it might have been a little bit more challenging. Whatever your experience, that is a very quick method. Let me ask you the question. Sway, were you doing that?
I was. Uh-huh.
Where did your ordinary ego consciousness go?
Into full focus on sensation.
Yeah. And full focus on sensation is another word for being grounded in your physical body. You were likely, and tell me if you agree with this, you weren't in your ordinary everyday ego consciousness.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So that's just a small, really simple, brief example of the practices that are contained in the toolkit, and then I teach in the Empath Academy, which is a group class as well, to become embodied and grounded, so that we can begin to wake up and cope with our gifts in an adaptive manner.
You know, I like you, I do a lot of work with people with trauma. And when we're in overwhelm, right, or in a fear response or whatever it is, the first impulse, or one of the, well, there's the fight, flight, and freeze, and then there's also dissociation, right? The leaving of our bodies.
Yep.
And what I notice is that there's actually incredible resource in, I mean, it is a resource. The capacity to leave our bodies in the face of challenge is actually a tremendous gift. It's a compassionate response to suffering or to something that feels overwhelming. And there's also the advantage of, if we're well practiced in leaving our bodies, I find this when I work with people often, you know, when we slow down and unpack a traumatic experience, there's often a great kind of spiritual resource that can come in for people when they have the experience of actually going out. Often there's a, you know, a connection to ancestors or a connection to the divine in some way, or a connection to the more than human world. And that, you know, I think part of what you're teaching as teaching the empaths that you work with, and part of what I do in my practice, is this idea of, okay, great. So how can we really work with that beautiful gift of that capacity to even to go in and out of different states of consciousness, to be in and out of our bodies, and to access that spiritual capacity while staying in? How do we actually create enough safety that we can come fully in our bodies and bring that spiritual awareness that we can access easily when we're not in our bodies in?
Yes, and to do it, and absolutely, and to do it in a way that's balanced. So a lot of us who have trauma, we leave our bodies and we go off into the other realms. I have a friend who's one of the best intuitives I know. His gifts were activated by really, really traumatic childhood experiences. We're talking, you know, every kind of abuse that you could think of. Mm-hmm. And because trauma is a really common experience with most of us who are sensitive, all of us, whether you're identifying with the label empath or sensitive or not, we all have the ability to be walkers between worlds. Mm-hmm. We all have the ability to move our consciousness into other realms and other dimensions. Now, what we want to do, at least ideally, I believe, is we want to have a balanced approach. If we have suffered a traumatic experience and we leave our bodies as a protective, right? That's as you say, it's a compassionate attempt by the body to protect us, really, is we go off into these other realms and we can perceive our ancestors, we can perceive spirits. That's a protective, compassionate thing that the body is doing for us. It's shutting down to prevent the pain that comes from, let's just say, physical abuse. Over time, if we're doing too much of that, then we lose a source of our power, I believe, which is our body itself. So ideally, we want to be as balanced as possible. So a balanced approach between spending time in the spiritual realms and the energetic realms, and then also just being a human being and enjoying the joys of being in a body, of feeling like the bare feet underneath our, or the bare ground, rather, underneath our feet. That's a really wonderful healing experience. And so, absolutely. I love what you said, what you just said about that.
And one of the things you talk about in your books, you really break it down in your toolkit. You know, hey, here are the steps, right? So you don't have to just suffer and live with this overwhelm. And the first part of it, you talk about becoming a spiritual detective. And the second part, you talk about becoming a spiritual warrior. So I wonder if you could break those down for us a little bit and tell us, what do you mean by that? And why is that useful for an empath?
Mm-hmm. It's useful for not just empaths, for anyone who is interested in expanding their consciousness, really. So the first phase of the development, and again, this is just one way of looking at, one way of structuring both an explanation of what is happening for certain individuals and also a method of living your life. So phase one, becoming a spiritual detective. And again, whether you're an empath or not, you can benefit from doing this. So what we mean by that, what I mean by that is using a process. And I'm a big fan of practicality and uniting right brain and left brain. So here's another example, really, of an attempt, one attempt to unite right and left brain. Right brain is the spiritual self, the more creative self, self that's tied to spirit. So in order to get to that place, to that world where we can perceive our highest self, if you will, it operates on a much higher vibratory plane. Some of you may be familiar with that. One of the ways of becoming a spiritual detective and to use your energy antenna to perceive those other realms is using a process that is represented by an acronym that I call OPEN, becoming open, opening up our energy antenna. And we do it through four processes, and each process begins with a letter of the word open, O-P-E-N. So O stands for observing, becoming better observers. T is becoming better perceivers of all of the energy and feelings and sensations around us. E stands for experiencing, and N stands for noticing. All four of those are words are describing similar experience involved in becoming a spiritual detective, or you might say an energy detective that basically represent the same process, and that is just simply placing your awareness into your resources. And one of those resources is you're using your physical body, just like we did with the rubbing of the fingers together, and becoming aware of the energy that is there and the quality of energy. So for an empath and a sensitive person, you're sitting on the bus. Let's just use that as an example. Or you're sitting in a public place on a park bench, and you're sitting next to another person, and all of a sudden, this is a very common experience for myself and for people who are empathic. Suddenly, somewhere in your body, you start to have a little twinge of pain, and so the mantra that we teach is what reason do I have to feel this way? So you may have experienced this if you're sensitive or empathic. You may have felt a shoulder pain. You may have felt someone's tooth pain. You may have felt a little twinge in your toe. Now, whether you have a memory of experiencing something like that or not, I can assure you because, and again, I state that with all humility, right? You are experiencing the energy of other people, whether you're aware of it or not. So why not become aware of it and use this following mantra? What reason do I have to feel this way? So let's say you walk into a room. There's another example. Many of us have the ability to walk into a room. We can feel the energy present in the room. We can feel if it's tense. We can feel if it's lighthearted. If it's tense and you came into that room in a great mood and you were just laughing 2 minutes earlier, and all of a sudden now you're perceiving this pit, feeling in the pit of your stomach that feels like a knot, ask yourself the question, what reason do I have to feel this way? And the answer in many cases for most empathic and sensitive people is, I don't have any reason. Mm-hmm. 95% of the time, let's just use that as a random arbitrary number, that probably approximates what's really happening. 80%, 95% of the time, the energy experience is probably not originating from what you know as you. Of course, here's a mind blower. In the spirit world, there is no such thing as you, right? We're all connected. We're all one. That's a whole other show, really. And in your distinct consciousness, what reason do you have to feel the way that you do? If you use that mantra and you go throughout your days and start to practice that, you're going to have that much more embodied. And because you're more embodied, therefore you're more powerful. You're more empowered. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And let's go into that a little bit further and talk about discernment, because I know that that's a big challenge for healers at all, but, you know, especially empaths, to you know, really get clear, is this mine? What is mine? How do I know if it's mine? And if it's not mine, then the next level of that is, what do I do with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're at the point where you've realized, okay, you've asked yourself the question and you're pretty sure that it's not yours, and yet you're experiencing it, and this is where we get a lot of energy illnesses, is a common experience for sensitive and empathic individuals. So chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, energy-based syndromes that are not diseases because science really doesn't have an explanation for them. So they call them syndromes, which is a collection of symptoms that multiple people experience. So muscle pain, joint pains. The joints are actually, I have a certification in polarity therapy, and which is a blending of East Indian and Chinese energy medicine. And the joints are one of the areas where, and the indigenous community understands this as well, Native American community, other parts of the world as well, that energy can come into the body through the joints and leave the body through the joints. So if you're an empath and sensitive person, you're literally walking around in a sea of energy of vibrating molecules and subatomic particles, let's put it that way, that are moving. And you, because you're sensitive, and some of us have more of a degree of this than others, you to some degree may be a sponge. Most of us are. We're like sponges. We have an ability to take in energy from the environment and from other people. So over time, that energy builds up literally in your cells, in your energy field, what's known as by some as your aura, and it stays. And it stays as, we could call it, oh, we'll say it's psychic debris from a year ago, and it's still in your aura. You had a traumatic experience a year ago, and these molecules, these subatomic particles, let's put it that way, are hanging around in your aura. You can't necessarily see them with your eye because they're vibrating so fast, and yet they're there. They're a part of your body. And so now it's your task, if you want to be optimally thriving, to get rid of that energy that doesn't belong to you. So again, this is only possible to the degree to which you are grounded. The ground, the earth itself, is a acceptor. It can take from you, this is one of the many methods of getting rid of the energy. It will take from you the energy out of your body, out of your field, if you offer it to her. And in the indigenous viewpoint, the earth is a living being. Mm-hmm. She has a consciousness and a mission, and one of those responsibilities or missions, if you will, that's my word, is to take energy that's no longer needed from humanity. Okay? Mm-hmm. Trees do the same thing. Trees take from us our waste product. Mm-hmm. We have a reciprocal relationship with them. They take from us what we don't need. So what we breathe out is what the trees must have to survive. Carbon dioxide, and their waste product, oxygen, we must have to survive. So trees and the earth do the same thing. They take from us what we don't need. Now, you can do a bunch of techniques. There are infinite possibilities and infinite ways that you can do what's called raising your vibration. This means making your molecules, your subatomic particles, your cells, everything that you are comprised of, whatever label you use to describe you and the physical matter that you're comprised of, make it move faster. That simply means more freedom, more space. You're more of a hollow tube, so that energy can flow in and out of you with absolute ease. And it doesn't get stuck because you've got so much psychic debris from the past working around. So I work from a physical perspective, helping individuals find practices such as yoga, such as using drums, using rattles, using dancing, using movement, using yoga. You use qigong. I mean, there's all of these practices, chanting, smudging, using herbs, using essential oils. all of these practices are contained in the Empath Toolkit as just being one resource that you can use to gain a little bit of wisdom to help you move forward and become clearer and cleaner.
Great. You know, as you're talking, I'm reminded, those are great resources, by the way, that especially the physical movement. I think that, you know, we forget, we live in a culture that values movement for the purpose of, exercise for the purpose of looking good in some ways, and forgetting that it's actually, if we're not moving, we become stagnant and cells die. You know, there's a sense of withering that happens in our system. And so I love that you mentioned the dancing and the yoga and the Qigong and all those movement practices that can keep the energy circulating and moving. Mm-hmm. And so that's really great. And I want to shift slightly to a related question about, you know, I was just asking about, okay, well, so when we recognize what's not ours, how do we release it? And I find that when I'm working with healers, often there's a, especially kind of beginning on the path, there's a sense of one of the most difficult things to do is trust themselves, right? Mm-hmm. It's to trust the information that comes, to say yes to it, to recognize that that information or that sensation in their body has value, or that image or whatever it is, that whatever they're receiving is valuable and serving them in some ways. And one of the things that I notice is there's a tendency also to be really critical, of self-critical, especially for empaths. And I've been playing with this theory around it, and I want to just, you know, kind of check it out with you and see what you think, that a lot of it is that they're actually picking up on other people's thoughts in the room. So it's not just energy that we pick up on, but often, you know, we might be thinking a thought about ourselves that's either a past thought inherited from a family member that they thought about themselves, not just thought about us, but they thought about themselves, and we took it on. Or if we're in a circle, you know, and someone's having a particular experience, if our part of our gift is to, you know, kind of take on and process the shadow material, then we'll actually take it on, but then we'll misattribute that thought and think that it's our own. And then misattribution is what causes us the suffering.
Yes, absolutely. It's a reality that, you know, as we wake up as a culture, as we wake up as humanity, we wake each other up. And this process of picking up on other people's thoughts it really does happen. And the degree to which that we each are coming into the world and wanting more, we want to be our true authentic self. And let's say you go to a ceremony, a spiritual ceremony, and this could take a variety of forms. You know, it may be a Native American ceremony like an Anipi or a sweat lodge or a sun dance, or it may be a Peruvian ceremony, or maybe a group of people coming together in a meetup for the purpose of advancing consciousness and explore. When we do that, we merge our energies with the other people present. And so absolutely acknowledge if you've had the experience of having shadow thoughts, let's say, you know, I was up at a Sundance, you know, a couple weeks ago, and this is a common experience that we would be very wise to wake up to and acknowledge and affirm that it happens. It's not us. The experience that I had is, you know, in this powerful ceremony, the shadow comes up because when light is created intentionally, the shadow has to leave, or the darkness has to leave, a fundamental spiritual law. So it comes to the surface, and it may manifest as a thought in your own head that doesn't originate from you. It originates from the intention of the group or the people around you. So some of the thoughts that, I get more than thoughts. I mean, I get feelings and sensations and knowledge, and others do as well, right? So feelings of suicide, thoughts of, oh, I'm no good. You know, I found myself comparing myself. You know, I've been doing this work for 15 years, which is actually not a long time, and yet I'm pretty confident in the work that I do. And yet during the ceremony, why would I be having thoughts comparing myself to others, saying, oh, you're not any good. Mm-hmm. You're not any good. Well, it's because of the intention of the ceremony is to release the shadow, to release it. Some of us will experience it. And then it it leaves and it doesn't bother us again. And those thoughts are now gone, right? Because we created light, we released it. So the point is a really valid one that you said, mm-hmm. that we pick up on other people's thoughts, and a lot of times we, empaths and sensitive people especially, we believe because we have the ability to perceive the darkness, to perceive and experience the shadow, that we are the ones who are wounded, and nothing is further from the truth. Absolutely not. You are not wounded. It is the energy which you are feeling, perceiving, experiencing, noticing that is wounded, and it is your job to acknowledge and embrace, number one, it's not me. Number two, it's okay. It's part of human experience, to experience the shadow, to experience those thoughts. And number three, it's temporary. It will go away. The stronger you make yourself, the more you seek out ceremony, ritual, practices like yoga, practices like Qigong, practices that raise your vibration, whatever they may be, whatever you choose and feels right for you, you will then create in yourself like a coat of armor. So that just like the great spiritual masters, whether you consider that Jesus or Buddha or Kuan Yin, whatever your idea is of representation of the divine, those masters had coats of armor because they were vibrating so quick, so fast, so high, that whatever hit them, whatever was thrown at them, just bounced off them, just like they were wearing a suit of armor. And that's what will happen to you, undoubtedly, when you continue to seek out your highest self.
I love that. I really want to underline, highlight what you said about the wound that you're perceiving not being evidence that there's something wrong with you. It's just the energy that you happen to be picking up on, and there's also nothing wrong with it. So I think there's often this feeling of contamination, right? Of, oh, there's something wrong with me, and I better sequester myself from other people. I'm really damaged. And I love the amount of compassion that comes in when, one, you recognize that that energy is not yours, and two, you recognize that there's actually nothing wrong with that energy. It's part of what we as humans, you know, came here to learn through and heal through, and it's just what's on its way out.
You know, I love that way. It is. It's on its way out. In the spirit world, there is only the vibration of the word yes. So everything, if you could see yourself from the eyes of the divine, which you can do, just takes a little focus, and let's put it this way, if you were to cross over, if it was your time, which it most likely is not, and if it were, and if you could see yourself with the eyes of the divine from the other dimensions, you would see that you are amazing. You are only good. You are incredible. And every decision you've ever made, whether you believe it has been detrimental or not, is irrelevant. The spirit world only knows that every decision you've ever made, every experience you've ever had, is always unfailingly used with compassion for your own personal growth and the collective growth of all of the circle, which is everything in what we know as the universe. Always used, every experience always used for the good. Always. So there's only that vibration of yes in the spirit world. And the more that you listen to calls like this, listen to, you know, or find people to, like-minded people to meet up with, the more that you will get to that place and advance your own consciousness. And here's the amazing thing. Because you do it for you, you do it for others. Or because you do it for others, you do it for you. Back and forth, vice versa.
That's one of the things that I love that you highlight in your book that's included in the Empath Toolkit, is that you really talk about how being an empath is actually a path of service, and that it's really about reducing the suffering on the planet, and that it's something that I don't know if you name this or not, but I'll take it a step further and say that I also hold the view that there's an agreement before we come in, before we incarnate, of okay, I'm going to serve in this particular way, and there can be a lot of pain and suffering associated with that if we don't get on the right side of that, you know, to really learn these tools that you're offering so that it doesn't take us down with it.
Yeah.
And B, if we think that it somehow signifies that the pain that we're experiencing somehow signifies that there's something wrong with us, then we actually miss the gift of our offering.
Yes. You know, the offering is really the relevant word. There is such power in that word that your life, our lives, each of our lives are offerings and can be offerings the more that we wake up to all of creation, everything under the sun and beyond. And it's the belief of, well, it's my belief, and it's the belief of a lot of people in this day and age, that you know, the time that we're in right now is a time of great transformation, and we've been in a cocoon, if you will, over the last decades, hundreds of years, and there have been many stories and quote-unquote prophecies from basically every system of religious thought on Earth about what might be happening on the planet right now. So pretty much every, and I wrote a book about this called Navigating 2012, Thriving in Earth's New Age, which really isn't so much about the 2012 prophecy, it is about the times that we're in, that every religious culture and system of thought has a story about what will happen at some point in the future. Now, the question is, are we in this time right now? And I believe we are. So here's an example of some of the stories. So in Christianity, there's a time, and we're not endorsing Christianity, I'm just using this as an example. There's a story in Christianity about a time when their great master, Jesus, will return to the earth. And there's a story in the Lakota tradition about the return of the white buffalo. There's a story in the Hopi traditions about the fifth world. There's a story in the Aztec about the time of this, what's called the sixth sun. The Mayans have a time about when the ego will fall and unity consciousness will come about. I believe that if we're not already there in these places that these religions have described to us, we are darn close, and we are on the tipping point of entering into those times. So I believe, and I have a feeling that some of the listeners might relate, who, especially if you're empathic or sensitive, that, you know, these are magical times. There's a lot going on right now in the world. And yeah, it's pretty chaotic. And yet the chaos, and I don't mean to be flippant about this, you know, chaotic times, this is obviously very painful for a lot of people in the world. There's great poverty, there's great destruction happening with some natural disasters, and there's a disparity between the rich and the poor. And yet that from a spiritual perspective, if you view it in a broader sense with some of these broader lenses, this is all leading us to a higher place. And again, I don't mean to be flippant. It is leading us to a place of greater awareness and greater purity and greater higher vibration. So the only choice we have, if we are going to be true to our soul's calling and aligned with our soul's calling, the only choice we have is to just continue down the path and create light and be as positive we can about whatever situations in your life that might be challenging to you right now. There's a lot of financial instability for a lot of people on the planet, emotional turmoil, relationship instability. You know, just know that that's part of this great thing that we call great mystery. And stay true to your path, knowing that that chaos and that energy of the shadow, unbeknownst to itself, serves you and serves God.
I love that. You know, we're right at the end, and I want to say one thing in relationship to that before we close, which is you were talking about, you know, not to be flippant. And there's, I think this is true for empaths, and I think this is true for all of us who are, you know, kind of conscious to these times, that the way kind of through is to hold both the compassion and empathy and love and willingness to meet what is, willingness to meet our suffering, to be present to it, and the larger understanding of this as part of the path of transformation. So to really hold both.
Yes, hold yourself. And in fact, you may want to take a moment right now and just put your consciousness in your heart and just create a feeling of gratitude for what you have. Let's create a feeling of gratitude together for what you do have, and create that feeling, feel it in your heart, and then just send that feeling of gratitude off to someone in your life who's important to you and someone who could benefit from that. And ask your higher self, ask God, ask the divine, whatever word you use, to just send it to that person and let that person feel the experience of being held, as you say, and held in a container of love.
Mm, what a beautiful way to end the interview. It's perfect. Yeah. Thank you so much, Michael. Really appreciate your presence and the gifts of what you bring through, and I know it'll be really of service to a lot of our listeners today. So I want to give your website again, which is www.empathconnection.com. And you guys can find me on the web at thresholdshealing.com. And thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Sway, and all the best to you and all the best to all of the listeners.
Thank you again for joining us this week. Thresholds to Awakening can be heard live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. Please join Sway Emily Spilkin then, and have a great week.